Welcome to Transistor Radio, where we do a chip chat. I'm Doug, and Dylan's here with us today, and we also have a new guest. But also, I'm just happy that Transistor Radio is back at all. So, Dylan, won't you introduce our new guest slash permanent co-host?
Yeah, so the biggest problem with Transistor Radio is that I'm, you know, an unstoppable object, and Doug is an unmovable object, right? And we often just miss each other. Like, just fly past each other, we talk too much, we yell, and we go off topic. And then we also just don't record. So we need someone who is mentally stable to get on the podcast with us. And his name is John of Asianometry. So we're so welcome to have someone who can be the rock between our hard place, you know, our the heart to our relationship. I don't know what other kind of metaphor to make here, but the amazing
so
and talented
much.
John
yeah,
of Asianometry.
You guys are too nice, and I'm glad to be on with everyone, and hopefully trying to get you all sort of sorted out, and let's make this fun. Let's go cook.
Let's cook. So, speaking of cooking this week, John, so one of the benefits I think John has is, like, he's a really knowledgeable guy with a lot of questions, and I feel like can maybe keep us on topic. John made a potential topic list for this week. I don't know, Dylan, if you see it. We haven't debriefed. We haven't talked since SemiCon. Honestly, I think the thing about SemiCon that's, like, hard, maybe compared to normal conferences, is it's so big. It's hard to pull away specific tracks of, hey, what's the big thing? There's a lot of little interesting things I thought was very exciting, but it's hard for me to even begin where. The thing I think I'm most excited about was probably the Kokusai booth, just because there's an upcoming IPO. Really interesting to spend a lot more time there. So I've been doing that. I found that was probably my highlight, is talking to Kokusai and learning what they do before the IPO. So,
wait, what's this company? What do they do?
So they do, like, batch wafer, like, I want to say furnaces, as well as I want to say some CVD process. So it's like,
they make some deposition tools, and then additionally they make furnaces. But the interesting thing is, it's like the highest density throughput kind of tool in the world. So maybe not perfectly great for, you know, leading edge logic, but memory, they just fucking absolutely tear up. You know, and it's very, very efficient there. They've got big customers in Samsung, SK Hynix, Micron, but they also do sell to Intel and TSMC, and, you know, as well. But they're just, like, the highest throughput to, like, square footage area. Like, their tool is smaller than, like, most people's single wafer tool, and it can fit, like, 150 wafers, right? And, like, obviously there are many drawbacks and what kind of chemistries you can do and all that kind of stuff, but it's crazy how high density and how high throughput their tools are. And so they do win a certain segment of the market by a landslide.
Well, what's interesting is the roadshow just came out, and it looks like their revenue is actually much heavier into NAND than I previously thought. And NAND right now is in this giant recession. So I think the excitement of it is it's probably a good stock or IPO, depending on the price it comes out at. So that was probably where I thought.
Is this just like even more levered Lam research? Holy
yes,
fuck.
Yes, it is. It is, right? Because NAND spending is zero, right? Or not zero, but, like, utilization is all-time lows. And right now, even at utilization all-time lows, their biggest business is NAND. So you're like, wait, if NAND spending goes up next year, you know, their 50% business, like, let's say it goes up, like, 50%. Like, there's you know, the forward year should be really, really good, or if NAND normalizes, which it probably will. So I think I'm really excited about that, the IPO before and, like, getting to know the company a little bit, you know, by their products before the IPO and all the documents around that.
Yeah. Myron's going through it right now on my side, but I'm excited to dig through the data myself as well. It's a crazy interesting company, and like the folks at the booth, right? Like, this is the one thing about SemiCon Taiwan that you just don't get in SemiCon East. Like, SemiCon East is mostly sales guys, and then a couple of, like, project manager type folks, right? At SemiCon West, the booths are just so big. you can just find the, like, you can find, like, the two-year-old, like, two years of experience sales guy who's going to tell you how it is because he doesn't know how to, like, cap about things. And then there's also, like, the engineer who's been working on it for a decade. And then there's also, like the senior guy who's been there for 30 years and he runs, like, half the company's business, right? And it's, like, you have all of these people at the booth. And so you get, like, the wealth of every angle and direction. And Kokusai was just, you know, was not the only one, but, like, it was, like, every company. Like, hey, yeah, like, I hear you're really good at, you know, advanced packaging. They're like, yeah, we sold 12 tools to TSMC. I'm like, what are you doing, dude? Don't tell me this.
Well, on top of that, too, is there's a lot of companies that I never interacted with, but I know a lot about that actually showed up on the floor. For example, Camtek, a company that I've written, thought, owned, done a lot of work on before. They were, like, actually in person. I was like, it's really nice to see that Camtek's a real company. Like, you know, like, obviously in Taiwan, where, like, you know, where most of their revenue is, that makes a lot of sense. But it's just, like, it was cool to see and talk to people and, like, put, you know, understand their tools from a more granular perspective. And Taiwan, Semicon, like, that's just, like, it's the place to be. Like, Semicon West is frankly, like, kind of a joke, you know?
So, like another awesome story was we went to Onto Innovations booth and one of their execs, like, is literally an executive. Is like he recognized Semi Analysis. He's like, oh yeah, I read your blog, and I've like messaged him on LinkedIn from time to time. But he just sat down and gave us a lesson for like an hour and a half while his lunch was getting cold. Like, thanks, dude. Like, you wouldn't be on Semicon West doing this, right? Like it's just so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Taiwan is the spiritual home of semiconductors. There's no other way to put it. And going to the spiritual home was just, like, so much better. So, yeah, I don't know any other interesting call-outs. Like, it's very hard to like, hey, say, hey, here was, like, the thing. I went to some interesting side things, but I don't think there was really much incremental in Semicon East, unfortunately, this year. So, I don't know about you.
Oh, man, I completely disagree, right? Like, there was some equipment stuff. I got my I now know how many tools, or I think I can estimate how many tools Camtek and Onto will ship into HBM and CoWoS and I mean, I knew it was a long, and I'd written about that, like, you know, how they were the best lever to advanced packaging quite a bit ago, but, you know, being able to do the math on the exact numbers of tools required is just like another level of like, oh man, I'm nerding out.
Okay, no, I just meant like product launches, something like new stuff. Like, obviously you go to the conference, you always learn new things, if that makes sense. I don't know. That's just me. Like, what? There wasn't like a big product launch. Just that's like that's what I love to see. Like a new tool, a new cool tool, a new technology I've never heard of, and same
fair one. Point on that. Like, yeah, there was not anyone saying like this is our new thing. It was like oh yeah, this exists, and also like, wait, what? Why does like for example, like KLA, I've probably visited their booths like 10 times, and I've talked to their people a collective of like 15 hours across like various industry shows in the US. And at Semicon Taiwan, we just happened to like sit next, we just started talking to this guy about like a backend like die sorting tool, and it's like, why are you making the crappiest tool on the planet Earth? Like you can't be making more than like 20% margins on this. But it's like, yeah, we have it, buddy. And it's like, that's what the guy works on. So I don't know. It's just fun to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Like the real nuts and bolts and like the stuff that isn't even like strategic, I think. And then the West that people wouldn't care about, if it makes sense. Like it's all there. It's all there and it's all in all its glory. So do you want to move on from Semicon? Like talk about maybe the thing that I think we've all been thinking and talking about?
John, what's your, what did you think about Semicon? I know.
Oh yeah. I forget.
The past,
yeah.
You got B-roll, but like, you know, this time you're with two crackheads. So it was a little different.
It was definitely an experience watching you just kind of interrogate these poor people, just like a flock of vultures just descending on a particular stand. It was fun. No, it was very fun. I think it's definitely an education, and Semicon this year was definitely more interesting than last year. I definitely would come back again, and hopefully with a better understanding of what to do and with more time actually to attend the various sessions. Not all the sessions were great, but they were worth my time to sit there.
My favorite thing was actually if I walked with you, John, or if I walked with Myron, like people would start speaking Chinese to y'all, but like y'all's Chinese was like meh, right? Like And it was great because, like, no one expected me to know Chinese, but they expected you guys to translate for me sometimes.
we need someone to translate for us next time to get the real thoughts. I want to talk next about the, like, as Doug said, I want to talk about the thing that everyone wants to is talking about now, the 7-nanometer Huawei chip. Dylan, you did a post about it, or you did a report about it, I think a week ago. What's been kind of the reactions to it, and what are people saying?
You know, my favorite thing is that I have now a total of 6 chargebacks, you know, from various folks, which is funny, right? Like, you know, I don't know, sweat off my back, whatever. You know, people subscribe, people cancel, people do chargebacks, it happens. But you know, it was quite interesting to see, like, people were that angry about it. Some people, right? A lot of people were very happy about it. A lot of people, you know, there's been some statements of people, like, ignoring it or twisting it as well, too. You know, so some folks have twisted what was in it. But, you know, overall, the reception has been very good. You know, people, you know, I think talk about the topic much more accurately now, right? Like, because there was just a ton of misinformation going on, and that's the reason I had to write that thing. You know, on what the chip was, what its capabilities are. Like, yes, it does have a custom architecture. Yes, on CPU, GPU, NPU, everything, right? Yes, the node is 7-nanometer class. I mean, Second Sight posted that, but there are still people claiming it wasn't. No, the node is not bad. Look at the characteristics of the chip and like pictures of it, right? Like, and then going forward, right? Like, there's this whole narrative that they can't do this in mass volume. But Huawei's shipping millions of phones this quarter. And they'll ship millions more next quarter. This is a high volume product, right? You know, if you look at some of the industry folks like Ming-Chi Kuo, they're saying 10 million units this year. Ming-Chi Kuo being the most famous Apple analyst and, you know, probably the best Apple supply chain analyst out there, right? And so if he's saying 10 million units for this Huawei phone, I believe him, right? And that's this year, right? And it only just kind of launched. So what is it next year? Is the question for in-house chips. And I think it's a big, tremendous impact on the market for that reason.
The thing that I thought was so crazy is, like, the U.S. Commerce Secretary being like, this is just fake. And you're like, what? Like, it's just really, like, I don't understand the, like the, there's, like, cognitive dissonance for this Huawei phone for some reason. Like, for some reason, like, they just, like, no, it's not real. It, you know, the yields are fake. Everything you're saying is wrong. And it's like, no, why are people not willing to believe that it's a real phone? And I don't know. It's like,
I mean, benchmarks are staring them in the face, right? Benchmarks are staring them in the face that this is as good as a 1 to 2 year old Qualcomm chip, right? Like, you don't need to make a leap. And then I think the problem is when you look at the government, who talks to the folks in the government the most are policy people who are placed there by industry, industry folk, and folks who have an economic interest in shipments continuing, right? And so I think that's the biggest problem is, like, well, like, of course they can't ramp it in volume because ASML says so, and because, you know, Applied Materials says so, but in reality they're continuing to ship tools to SMIC, right? So, because they've been granted licenses. So I think it's you know, and there's a whole narrative that, like, this isn't new capacity. This is them repurposing old tools, but it's like, guys, you can literally see that SMIC started construction of SN2, their second fab in Shanghai. So SN1 was their first fab in Shanghai, 14-nanometer fab. Second fab of Shanghai is the 7-nanometer fab. They started production or started building of it, and they've been installing tools, and they only just started installing tools not so long ago, about a year ago, actually. You know, a year and a half, actually. It was like May-ish of last year. So about a year and a half. So it's like, how can you pretend that and like, there's all sorts of Chinese media saying SN2 is the 7-nanometer fab, right? Like, there's nothing pointing to the fact that this is some repurposed old fab and that they took down old capacity to build this.
What'd you hear about what do you think about, like, the gross margins of this chip? Do you think this SMIC is making money off this economically by itself without subsidies?
I would argue that is irrelevant, because if you look at the Shanghai subsidies, they're basically paying for half of the fab. like Shanghai, the city slash, and plus the provincial government, right? They're basically paying for half the fab. Between the free land, between the subsidies they gave for construction and tooling, they're basically getting half the fab paid for. And then the other aspect is, even when TSMC starts ramping a node, they've always said it's lower gross margin, right? So they make less money from their new node than they do their old nodes for 2 whole years. 3 years for 5 nanometer, in fact. It took two and a half years for 5 nanometer to reach corporate average gross margins. And for that, in the meantime, they continue to make a lot less money. And so the point is, if you can ramp it, if you can ship a product, and as long as you can bear the capital costs, you will be very profitable once the capital costs start to depreciate. And in the case of SMIC, they don't even have that many depreciating costs because half of the fab is paid for.
Yeah, and also, like, you, like, I mean, I think Dylan in a group chat, you're like, Huawei is the PLA, which is a unique level of Dylan, Dylan terminology.
Honesty.
Yeah, honesty, yeah. But very funny. Like, my guy always manages to have such a way with words. But at the same time, it's pretty much true. Like, for example, Paul Trilio, who is a guy that both me and Dylan are not fans of, and you know what? I hope no one listens to this podcast. I don't know, don't follow him on Twitter. But he just posted he posted this thing apparently, and you know, I don't know if this is real or not, but it's like, hey, announcement that the deduction ratio of R&D expenses for IC and industrial machinery enterprises over the next 5 years, eligible semiconductor companies can deduct 120% of R&D expenses before tax. 120%. That's not 100% deduction. Essentially, it's like, it doesn't matter, dude. Like, you and me, we should, like, it's in your...
Wait. So you make money.
Yes.
You make money
from spending R&D. So...
I love it. And this is why, like, China's railway company has, like, a massive IGBT fab that they're just throwing
up,
right? Like half the capacity of, like, ON Semiconductor they're throwing up in, like, 3 years.
Because you get...
Free money.
Yeah, free money. So it's like... There's and like maybe okay the entire conversation of like hey does you know the industrial policy of China is that sustainable? That's a whole other conversation that I think is outside of the spec of this this podcast. But at the same
Transistor
time,
radio.
Yeah, that's a little outside of what I'm able to talk about, to be honest with you. But while they're doing this, yeah, SMIC is profitable because China is straight up giving them 120% of R&D. Expenses as a tax deduction. The city of Shanghai is paying for half of the cost of the fab. Like, yeah, it's profitable.
Oh yeah, and then my favorite is if you make under 28 nanometer, you don't pay taxes for the next 15 years.
Wow.
So like, amazing. So yeah, the subsidies. Oh my god, dude, really? So pretty much, there's no taxes. You get tax incentives, and like, you can collect. Wow, there's just no taxes. Essentially,
they're just handing cash to you.
Yeah.
Hand to a fist.
Yeah.
And then there's the big funds, right? So there's big fund number one, and then I think that was about $50 billion, and there was the second one.
They just did big three.
And each of those has a public-private partnership investment ratio of 5 to 1. So every, you know, to get a dollar out of the fund, you have to get $5 from the public market. And then on top of that, like, all the city and provincial governments are also throwing money. So you're at, like, no, there's, like, over $500 billion being pumped in, right? Yeah. This will work, right?
All right. On that exciting note, let's move on to another subsidy thing, TSMC Arizona. There's a new article that came out a couple of days ago about TSMC in Arizona talking about an advanced chip packaging investment. What do you guys thoughts about that?
Well, you know, the original article as quoted within like the first in the second paragraph, I think. But my comment was basically that, hey, this fab is a paperweight because you still have to send the wafers back to Taiwan, right? You know, Apple made a big deal about, you know, using that fab. NVIDIA made a big deal about using that fab. AMD made a big deal about using that fab. In the case of Apple and NVIDIA, and especially Apple, right, every single chip uses TSMC info, right? Integrated fan-out. And that is all in Taiwan. AP1 through AP7 are all in Taiwan. So you have to ship the wafer back to get it packaged. So, you know, the fact that you make the wafer in the U.S. is irrelevant. With NVIDIA, right, the chips that people care about are the H100, you know, A100, those chips. Those use CoWoS, and those are manufactured, those are packaged in Taiwan. You know, the memory comes from South Korea, of course, but the chip has to be packaged in Taiwan. And so it's like, well, this fab. And then the other thing is like the mask shop is in Taiwan as well, right? Masks are the thing you put inside the photolithography tool to sort of have it make the patterns. Otherwise, you're just blasting a reticle of light, you know, kind of pointless. So you have to put a mask in there to actually draw the patterns. Right. And so, you know, again, right there, right? Like if the mask shop is in Taiwan, if Taiwan is, you know, if there's any sort of problems in Taiwan, the fab is a paperweight. And so that's what my comment was. And yeah, I think it's stirred quite a bit of trouble is that article that came out.
Doug, you think they'll do it?
What, the advanced packaging? I mean, I think now it seems like you have to, essentially, if everyone's figured out the fact that you're shipping the wafer back for advanced packaging to be done outside the United States, like, what's the point? Like, it's just by having an advanced fab here, it's just like making the supply chain more complicated for the sake of a political victory. And I think the CHIPS Act and the desire to do CHIPS Act funding to make this, you know, to reshore the United States semiconductor supply chain, you can't do this, right? Like, what's the point? Like, we might as well have this everything. We might as well just, like, we might as well have it made fabbed in Taiwan and packaged here, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's completely, yeah, I'm with Dylan on this.
Well, I just want to make the point that, you know, like, the CHIPS Act people knew this and they've been working on it. It's in the language, right? There's a significant amount of money going towards advanced packaging, but there have been no commitments towards advanced packaging facilities from any company in the U.S., right? Like, Intel, you know, yeah, they're investing some in New Mexico. Yeah, they're investing some in Arizona for packaging, but that's not much, right? The vast majority of their advanced packaging investments are going to Malaysia. And TSMC is in Taiwan, and Samsung is in Korea, and I believe some in Vietnam, if I recall correctly, right? Amkor is doing it in Vietnam, right? And it's like ASC is not doing it in the U.S. So it's like, where is the packaging capabilities, right? There's a couple places like Alabonics in Georgia, but like, you know, the real, real big investments are all outside the U.S. So it's like, well, there is no domestic security from building fabs in the U.S. Which I think is fine, right? Like in a globalized economy, but like, you know, it kind of defeats the point of like, hey, we onshored this. We didn't onshore anything.
Right. No, I think that's fair. That's a really good point. There was a mention of a possibility that TSMC moves R&D over to the United States. What do you got? Do you think they'll do it? I personally don't.
Bro, no shot. No shot.
No. It seems culturally no way in hell, right? Like, TSMC's Taiwan, like they send people from the Taiwanese fab lines into the United States because it improves productivity. But it's like the mothership sends drones; it doesn't send the mothership, right? What? There's no way. Maybe they'll do some like extremely niche portion, right? Like maybe TSMC will farm out some aspect of advanced packaging research in a very small portion with like a, you know, a partnership with a United States research institution, but like in a real way that matters, nah.
Yeah, maybe they'll have like what they have in Japan, right?
Yeah, but Japan, the fab that they did there it makes a lot of sense, right? Because while TSMC is the best at manufacturing semiconductors in the world, not every kind of semiconductor, right? And so in Japan, Sony is one of the big partners in the fab. And Sony's unique technology around CMOS image sensors, right, and how they do wafer-on-wafer hybrid bonding for their CMOS image sensors is something that, like, hey, like, Sony's got this technology, and they've been doing research on it, and they've mass-produced it, but, like, they don't run a fab efficiently, so it's a win-win, right? Like, TSMC gets R&D around wafer-on-wafer hybrid bonding, around CMOS image sensors, around some of the other automotive-type things as well, while also, you know, getting sort of a bit of a technology transfer help there, but also at the same time, they have a fab there and Japan gets a fab. Whereas the U.S., we're not doing any of that with TSMC. Like, there is no special, like, hey, NVIDIA is now, you know, or Intel is now, you know, like, it's the same chips that you're going to make in Taiwan are made here, and there's no specialty technology that any U.S. company is contributing, right? Like, if Texas Instruments or, like, Analog Devices like partnered with TSMC at that fab and it was doing like some specialty analog processes, that would make a ton of sense, right? Or Microchip or, you know, what have you, MaxLinear. But they're not, right? It's literally just the leading edge chip, leading edge process nodes a couple of years behind Taiwan. So there's it's like there is no thinking here in terms of, you know, it's obviously hard, but there's no like critical R&D that needs to be done or is being done to support this technology.
All right. Doug, you wrote something about ARM this past week. They IPO'd.
Yeah, ARM hater here, to be quite honest with you. I think Dylan would probably agree. I had a whole last conversation about him about this, like maybe a year ago before the ARM IPO. ARM IPO, for everyone that was familiar, priced at 51, traded up to 65 on the day after. Essentially been like sliding the entire week. It's also been a bad week in markets. Makes sense. But the thing is, the IPO is just like such a weird vibe. They have 24 banks partnering with them for the IPO. Like, it's pretty common in a big IPO to have like three banks, like lead right, lead left, and then like, hey, so a few other partners should like seven banks or something. No, 24 banks. That's like pretty much going out to like have the biggest sales force of all time to shove shares into every single wealth manager and like everyone. They try to put shares of ARM into every nook and cranny in the public markets possible. Mostly because the ARM IPO sucks. The price sucks for the stock. Maybe I'm being like a little mean, but like it trades like 90 times earnings, and like it probably is going to grow next year, and it'll probably grow next year after that. But like it just doesn't. I don't think the stock works. Like it's too expensive for what it is, and on top of that, ARM is kind of in this like peak relevance period, in my opinion, because it's at its absolute zenith of power in mobile. Right, like mobile volumes will start to at least like level off. And maybe they can, you know, increase mobile IP per core or something. So that's like a good business. But then, like, you know, all the data center stuff, it's having some traction with products like Ampere and Graviton. But like, it just isn't like, you know, the data center product that matters is NVIDIA's H100 and eventually the B100. So it's like, it just doesn't. I don't know. And at the same time, they're also extorting their customers like Qualcomm. So they're kind of killing their future. So yeah, they're going to be able to do a quick hit in profitability. But like, I think their long term is a little bit less dubious than a stock that trades for like 90 to 100 times earnings. So Dylan wrote something very similar.
I mostly agree with everything Doug said, except a few things, right? So we did a piece as well, and and Myron did a lot of work on this specifically, but like what we kind of concluded, right, is a couple things, right? Like, yes, data center growth is there, but it'll be limited in terms of volumes, and smartphones obviously go down in volumes, but the main thing is like, hey, you know, I think ARM makes something like 60 cents per smartphone today in licensing revenue, whereas Qualcomm makes $12 per iPhone. Right? Why is ARM's technology so much less critical now? They can't do that with Apple, but with MediaTek and Qualcomm, why is ARM's technology not critical enough that, you know, they make 1/4 of that, right? You know, if they make $12 on high end, $6 in mid range, and $3 on low end, which I think is not going to happen, right? That alone is more than twice the revenue of the business today, right? That alone. Right, just if they had the royalties go up that high. Now, I don't think they will go that high, but there is certainly room for royalties to go up in a world where the ex-Apple smartphone market is kind of just extorted, right? And this whole, like, yeah, and there's, like, obviously tons of, like, clouds over this, right? Like, ARM China is, like, a quarter of their revenue. Qualcomm is literally litigating with them, and if Qualcomm gets to ship custom cores, that eats away a huge chunk of that ability to raise prices like that. But Qualcomm is, you know, maybe they lose this lawsuit and they're forced to pay up on pricing. And so at the end of the day, right, like the question is how much can they raise prices? So actually, I think, like, you know, if you want to like go look at it with the rose tinted glasses, they're actually not like horribly valued on like 2025, and 2024, like 2025, they end up being valued like similar to like Synopsys and Cadence. Right, based on the pricing that they're going to ram up the market.
Yeah.
But of course, again, there's like RISC-V is going to happen in the latter half of this decade, right? Mobile will slowly, you know, fight back, especially like Qualcomm with custom cores, and you know, all this sort of stuff will happen that'll make sort of 2025 look the best that it will look. And so, you know, I agree with Doug that it's pretty garbage. Oh, and the other thing is that, like, Masa literally margined 75% of the company, right? He put a margin loan on it to take out, like $10 billion, which is not anywhere close to the collateral he put up. But, like, it's just interesting that he without selling the shares, he's loaned a bunch of them out.
It's very classic Masa, right? Guy loves leverage.
Yeah, it's classic Masa. But it's just, I don't know, man. It's a garbage setup. Like, I agree. The thing is, so the problem is they have this, like, lever, right? They can make more money by extorting the shit out of everyone. But the harder they pull it, by doing that, they literally incentivize RISC-V, right? So it's like short-term versus long-term. And so, I don't know. I just think it's a garbage setup. Yeah, you're right. The Cadence Synopsys comp is actually probably the good one because, hey, IP business. But I don't know, man.
Doug, we comp it to AlphaWave, and in that case, this company deserves to be a $5 stock, right? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No. 15, okay? Big difference. Are you telling me that AlphaWave should be comped to ARK? I'm just kidding.
What would the stock – what would AlphaWave be worth if it was comped to fucking ARB?
Oh, it would be like –
because I would bet money AlphaWave has higher revenue growth than fucking ARB.
Yeah, 100%. I bet they have higher revenue growth. I could probably run the numbers real quick, but it's like probably a five bagger or something like that from here. Like, it trades at 3x sales, 2x sales.
Just to be clear, I'm not like saying AlphaWave's, like, there's a lot of garbage business in AlphaWave, specifically the Star 5 stuff.
Yes.
In my opinion, but like, there's some the open really five, good business
too. The open five business is pretty, I agree with you. It is not the greatest business in the world. But let's just say, hey, you decided to trade it at 50 times earnings. It's a $6 stock. And today it trades at like $1.50 or like a euro, pence 50 or whatever. We're going to use the UK prices. But like, yeah, I think it's just like this weird, it's kind of a garbage IPO, man. Like, they did everything in their absolute power to move the stock. They really did. They did a super low flow. They put it in as many people as possible. They forced their customers to buy it. And, like, stock isn't that up. You know, like, Global Foundries and the Mobileye IPOs did a lot better without the dynamics that ARM has done. So, I don't know. Pretty garbage. So, honestly, no more thought.
I mean, but didn't they do the same thing, right? Both of those IPOs were, like, zero.
Yes, 100%. But the thing is, like, the price bump sticked. They usually don't turn in the first week, you know? And they had the one day price bump, but like, you know, stocks were still up 30-40% like maybe 3 months, like 2-3 months after the IPO. Stocks, like,
I mean, GFS has been a seesaw, right? Like, it's been a pretty volatile thing.
Yeah, because
down. It's up versus the IPO now, but like it's seesaw.
Because one of the things is whenever it goes up too much, they do a secondary, right? Like that's the math of it. If it goes, so you have super low float, and then you know there's more buyers and sellers, and then you sell. So you it goes up, you sell down. It goes up, it sells down. It's just this. So yes, Global Foundries has been pretty big seesaw, but Global Foundries also sucks as a business. Arguably even worse than ARM. But hey, that's not here nor there. So, do you want to talk about our?
Wait, you think Mobileye is a worse business than ARM?
No, he said Global Foundries.
No, sorry, Global Foundries.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, Global Foundries is going to have their shit kicked in by SMIC and the other China companies unless there's sanctions coming in.
Yeah. So I would much more. Yeah, Global Foundries, garbage company. Anyways, but that's not here nor there. I think that's ARM's future is really weird. Most of the part I think about it is like, you know, the more money they make, the worse their long term is.
Right.
So they have to pull the lever a little bit, not too hard, because if they yank it all at once, they really fuck it up. But if they slowly pull it, they'll make like a lot of money, and then hopefully by then the install base will slowly drip them dividends forever. So we'll see. I don't like the IPO. There's a price, personally. There's always a price. The IPO price was not it. So, anyways, we want to move on to our next topic this week.
Apple A17 Pro. We had a new iPhone last week, and it's the first 3-nanometer chip, they said. And
it's great. Back when I had a WordPress, right? Like, I used to write a lot about Apple chips. I used to do die shot things. I used to do a lot with Apple, right? Because they were the most exciting thing. And then I wrote a piece that said, like, Apple's CPU team is completely fucked, right? Like, they're half the team left to Nuvia, and then again everybody left to Rivos, and since then the company's CPU performance, there's clock speeds that you can get, and then there's IPC, basically architectural gains, right? And so, you know, while they've gone from 7 nanometer to 5 nanometer to now 3 nanometer, while they've increased the clock speeds from like sub 3 gigahertz to like 3.5 or something like that, the IPC's gone up like less than 10%. And it's like, it was like peak around the Apple A12 was like peak Apple shilling, like where the IPC of Apple's core was literally twice that of Intel and AMD. And you could look at the single core benchmarks of a variety of types, and they matched the desktop parts that Apple and Intel were putting out. Intel and AMD were putting out. And now, like, you look at it, and it's like, well, they've really not stepped it up since then, right? Like, I think Apple really hit, like, a, you know, sort of a peak of, like, oh, my God, they're just dominating everyone. And then people, you know, left, and, you know, they had some brain drain. But it's interesting. And then, you know, it also indicates the node is garbage because the efficiency of the chip is down versus the prior generation, right? A17 Pro is less efficient than A16.
Do you think it's designed? The question here is like, hey, we know design's garbage. We know the node has problems. Which one is winning harder or losing harder? The design or the node or the design, if that makes any sense?
I think design is arguably worse because, you know, they increased performance, yes, right? But they did that at the cost of power, which you could argue is the node. But architecturally, they did not innovate much, right? Like, they could have innovated a lot more, and they just haven't been innovating, right? And it's kind of at a time where, like, the script flipped, right? Like, since the A12, Intel and AMD have actually released, like, multiple CPU architectures that have made impressive jumps, right? Like, you know, Intel kind of catching up, and AMD really racing ahead with, you know, Zen 2, Zen 3, Zen 4, and Intel, you know, going from, you know, Sunny Cove and Ice Lake to Willow Cove and Tiger Lake, and then what is the Alder Lake one called? There's another cove, right? And then next year they're also going to have more. You know, there's another there's Royal Cove. You know, they've like jumped 4 major architectures and had solid performance improvements from all of them, right? In terms of IPC, not just clock speeds, right? And Apple, meanwhile, has kind of done the opposite. Is like their architecture has not improved much, at least on the CPU side, and their clock speeds have increased a lot. Now, I will argue, like, their AI segment and their GPU have improved a lot more, but the CPU is not.
Yeah, I think that's also maybe part of the story because we've been just beating up on these guys. Is that the a lot of the overhead seems to have gone to the AI portion of the phone, and there are. I don't know. They at least talked about how on the watch that they're going to start to be do on silicon on watch inference. So I think that's probably where it's going, is that they want to be able to at least start to create the overhead to do on phone inference. Yeah, it's not going to be GPT-4, but, you know, imagine they have some relatively solid, like, dude, Siri sucks, for example. Like, if they ran Llama instead of Siri, I'd be really happy and grateful. And I really want someone to run, you know, one of the LLMs instead of the current generation, because it sucks. So I think that's kind of what they're doing.
The problem is that the area of the CPU, this area for the CPU cores has gone up, right? So it's not like the number of transistors they're spending towards CPU is increasing without, you know, performance increases. But I agree,
just
right?
Just area,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, I agree that, like, they are focusing more on AI and GPU, which makes sense. But, like, if they weren't spending transistors on CPUs and they were, like, flat performance with just some clock speed increases, that'd be fine. But they're actually spending more transistors there, too. But, yeah, like, also, like, Apple will never put Llama on a phone. Are you kidding me? Like, Apple has, like, an allergy to, like, anything wrong, right? Like, if the phone said, like, anything wrong, it'd rather decline to say it than, like, say it wrong. And so that's, like, the way Siri seems to be built, whereas, like, you know, Llama and all LLMs are like the opposite, right? Like, I will just tell you wrong shit because fuck yeah.
Well, maybe that's where the Apple LLM comes into play. It will never be wrong. But I don't know. There's clearly some desire to move some inference there. So we'll see what that means. But that's like kind of like a longer term thing. But yeah, you're right. CPU garbage performance. Honestly, 10% CPU performance, it really does seem like 3 to 5. Like, I mean, they underperformed the node, you know, stated performance, and that sounds so bad, you know, like that's a huge brain drain there. Do you think that means that Qualcomm can like catch up in some crazy world?
Absolutely not. Right. I think Qualcomm is in a lot of turmoil themselves. Right. They're kind of bouncing back and forth on process nodes. And their CPU core architecture, their in custom one keeps getting delayed. They claim there's no delays, but you can just literally track Cristiano Amon's statements about this chip, and it's been delayed, very obviously. And so, like, when are they going to be able to catch up if they can't even ship their product to PC, let alone smartphones?
They probably can. So, okay. Any other things you want to say about this, about the Apple iPhone, before we finally go to our...
Dude, are you kidding me? We forgot the most important thing for us semiconductor nerds, right? The Apple iPhone, like, colors are literally done with PVD, physical vapor deposition.
Oh, yes. I thought that was so funny. And they're like, and in
not the natural one. Not the natural one, though. Just the other ones. The weird.
The titanium one?
The black one. And yeah.
My favorite part is they're like, we have this brushed and controlled to a microscopic or like whatever, like a nanometer precision. I was like, why did they fucking do PVD on the phone? And question, how does that work in a flow? Because I'm assuming,
equipment did they use?
I don't know. I mean, I guess the metal gets to be done in PVD, and it's, but like, what the hell is the PVD chamber for Yeah, anyway, sorry. I just was wondering. I was like, wait, what? The PVD? Yeah, good call out on the PVD stuff, because that made me laugh really hard.
It's interesting. Yeah, because like they straight up said the words PVD on the presentation. I was like, what? Why are you guys talking about PVD? So I was like, you know, it was pretty exciting to me. I was like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah, it was like a crossover that I didn't expect.
Next time Apple like just starts shilling like I don't know, like... Like, well, they said EUV. Well, that was the other interesting thing, right? They were like, on a 3-nanometer EUV process technology, like, but they didn't say EUV on 5-nanometer. Why didn't they say,
yes.
Like, yeah, like, what?
No, yeah, they said EUV. They talked about, like, all of a sudden, these guys start talking about semiconductor process technology, which I'm like, hey, that's great. I feel like my influence in the world actually has come to something, if it makes sense. But...
It's great, you know, if you think about it, right? Like, okay, like, yes, China is psyoping their population into wanting to work in chips by having these dramas about chip companies with, like, really cute Chinese girls and, like, relationships. But, like, hey, we've got Apple talking about our stuff. We are going to psyop the American youth into wanting to work in a fab.
That's the goal. That's the dream.
I was just thinking they just latched onto a topic or marketing term that ASML was using, and then everyone's like EUV, and then Apple iPhone's like, yeah, we use EUV too.
But the thing about Apple is like they excruciate over every single word, right? Like there's no way they people knew exactly every word that was gonna be said. And like they watched it 10 times. Like people who know what EUV is too.
Speaking of the note is trash earlier, we have a news item that says that Taiwan's TSMC has told its major suppliers to delay the delivery of high-end chip-making equipment. So TSMC seems nervous about customer demand. And then there's some other random comments on Reddit saying that TSMC 2N2 is delayed another year. I know that there's a lot of gossip, and gossip's always fun to talk about, but maybe not always be true. But what do you guys have to say about that?
So 3-nanometer was certainly delayed, right? And the other aspect is the capital intensity continues to go up. And so TSMC and Apple and other major customers sort of have to grapple with the fact that actually I need to stay on a process node for, you know, at least a fab, not necessarily a process node, but a fab for 3 years, right? Before I can pass it off to the like customers who are behind me, right? And so you saw this with Apple, right? Like... Actually, the watch chip was still produced on 7-nanometer until this year, right? Where some of the iPhone volume started to move to 3, right? Like, this is just, like, what you have to do. And in the same case, right, like, 3-nanometer's problems have extended the life of 5-nanometer even further, right? To the point where, like, you know, there's, like, AMD sticking with 5, you know, it's 4, but, you know, same class of process technology again, right, for their next generation CPUs. And so it's a pretty long-lived node. And then you like look at like 3 nanometers uptake is pretty weak still, right, even for next year. There's other companies getting on, but like it's pretty weak. So the point is like, you know, I have to continue to ramp 3 nanometer up, and if people aren't even uptaking it like hugely in 2024, then they're uptaking it in 2025. It makes no capital. It doesn't make sense for two to come so quick, right? Like on a capital efficiency standpoint. The other aspect is like obviously if they can get it to work, they will. And 2 nanometer is a lot more conservative for TSMC than it is for than 3 nanometer B was. Like 3B was like very aggressive on like certain aspects, and 3E backs off. But 2, besides, you know, gate all around, right, they're being very conservative. Like backside power delivery is not on the first generation of 2. You know, they're not shrinking the metal stack that much, if at all, versus 3B. So there's a couple things that they're doing that like are like, okay, this is very conservative. So you know, it's kind of like, you know, push and go, right? Like I could see that, you know, they probably do make 2 nanometer in the same fab, although even though there's all these claims that it's a different fab for 2 nanometer, maybe they can try and still do it in the same fab in Kaohsiung, is it?
Kaohsiung?
And yeah, is that the fab for 3?
3, Tainan.
Tainan. And then the fab for 2 is not Tainan, right? It's some other place?
I think it's starting... It's the Baoshan fab in Hsinchu that we passed by.
Yeah, there we go. So thank you so much, John, for the words I clearly can't say because I am horrible at Chinese. So like these fabs are not the same fabs either, right? So it's not like, you know, they could potentially just upgrade the Tainan fab for 2, but... Arguably, like they have to make their return on the 3 nanometer fab and how much production they wanted to scale there. And then there's all these rumors about delays with like construction of the fab. And, you know, I think it makes sense that 2 nanometer is not going to be in any 2025 products. Right. Maybe they start volume production in 2025 but it's in like 2026 products. But I think that leaves like, you know, not just a 1-year gap between them and Intel, but a 2 potentially, right, with 18A versus 2, you know, if Intel actually executes, right? So it's kind of like, this is Intel, the ball is in your court.
Dude, are you telling me? Are you telling me the Intel dream, the fabricated knowledge pitch on Intel could not just be speculation, but actually reality? We'll see, dude. I think it's pretty interesting time for Intel. I think that's actually something I thought was really interesting about VLSI, essentially, is all the presentations about backside power delivery was like, dude, 2's gonna suck. There's no way 2 works with the IR droop. The cell efficiency is going to be garbage. And that's what you talk about the metal shrink there, right? Is like, it seems like 2 is definitely hitting the physical limits of metal interconnect pitch width. And so that's why I think it's really interesting. It seems like there's a clear technology choice that Intel's making that TSMC is not making. And if things work out, we could be talking about Intel's world in 2024, which I think would be really cool.
I still think it's a long shot. Let's be clear, right? Like that Intel executes and can get to high volume. But I think there is some chances that they will ship the best process technology for a period of time. The question is really like, can they get to 50 or 100,000 wafers a month of it?
A customer. Can they get customers to support it? Can they do? Yeah, I agree.
I mean, not even customers. Like, can they transition their own product?
Yeah. So look, man, it is a long shot, to be clear. I still think it's a long shot. But the thing that's most exciting about it is it's extremely asymmetric, because if they pull off the long shot, like it fixes. It doesn't fix everything at Intel, but like, Jesus Christ, does it breathe a sigh of relief into the most beaten up, fucked up company that I've followed in a long time. Like, it's just been depressing in the last while. And, you know, we're both Americans. Definitely still... I'm now done hating on Intel, and I'm secretly rooting for them to figure out 18A and ship it in HVM for having an American leading edge fab. That would make me really, really happy.
I mean, I want it too, but I just want to be realistic. Like, I think yes. Intel will ship the best process technology for a period of time, but they will not be able to ramp to 50 or 100,000 wafers a month. And even barring an external customer, which they might get, you know, a couple small volume orders from various folks, right? Like, oh, if NVIDIA's rumors are true, it's not NVIDIA putting, like, the big data center chip on there. It's
yeah.
like them putting some, like, random mid-range or low-end gaming chip. And then testing the waters, but you know, or Qualcomm same way, right? Like some mid-range smartphone chip, but I doubt they get too many smartphone wins. It's more around like, hey, Google or Amazon or Microsoft or NVIDIA, like let's put a chiplet here, or like some
the
data
ball
center or high performance
is in
there, like but not a critical
their,
one.
The ball is in their court, right? Is if they ship 18A.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's
like
their opportunity, right?
In 2025.
Yeah, it's their opportunity.
In 2025.
Yeah.
With Clearwater Forest, if they can ramp that thing, like, fast, that means Intel fucking is back, right? And like yeah, sure, they're going to run their first wafers in 2024, and Arrow Lake supposedly comes out, and, you know, all these things. But if they can ramp Clearwater Forest in 2025 quickly, right? That is Intel is back,
yeah.
baby.
And I mean, to be clear, there's been some execution issues for a long point in time, but it's more refreshing than miss after miss after miss after miss, right? They said H2, it's like December 14th, so it's like barely made their own deadline or whatever for I want to say, was this for 4 or whatever, the most recent innovation day. But yeah, if they could ramp it in 25, Intel's back. But like, I hope Pat is, you know, cause you can see the opportunity, right? Like we're talking about, hey, Intel's back. So it's like, Pat, this is it. You have to keep praying and you have to keep all your employees in the fab constantly. Like no one goes home ever until this product is shipped. Okay. No breaks, nothing, no coffee. Everyone, well, I guess coffee, you need lots of coffee, tons of coffee. Everyone is at work constantly. No one sees their wives. No one does anything but dream of silicon. And it's like, you better fucking get this shit done. And like, that's Pat's opportunity. And right, like, yes, Clearwater Forest could meet, like, this is something that for the first time in a long time, they have control, right? They have a window and they have control in theory, right? And so it really is like, you know, fire everyone who sucks. Keep the people who are doing a good job there. Like, get it focused. This is your job as a manager, right? Like, you know, if you're, you know, Pat did the miracle product in keeping x86 alive with the was it 386? And this is like, this is his shot again. Like now the stars are aligning. Like if there is a, you know, and so like, that's what I think is so interesting because like, you know, the pieces are in place now. I think for the longest time, you couldn't even see where the Intel inflection would come from. You're just like, bro, this is fucking hopeless and sucks and I hate this. But now for the first time, it's like, you can see it. You can see it, dude. Just like, and it's like, in theory, you have the pieces. Like, just don't fuck up. So yeah, that's my Intel piece.
We're going to have to track his tweets again for more like Bible references.
Yeah, dude. I put this on Twitter. I didn't put it on the newsletter. If it worked, it would have put it on the newsletter. But we did a sentiment analysis of Pat Gelsinger's tweets because he tweets a Bible quote every week. And I thought, hey, maybe like these tweets are related to like what's going on at the company. And maybe that's related to the stock price. But it wasn't. But, you know, there was a hope. But you know, all I want to say is like if it works, not only is Pat Gelsinger like America's like hero, but also like Dr. Ann Keller, she is like a badass, right? Because she took over the fab, she took up over the role of R&D and manufacturing and et cetera, right? And like she turned it around with these 5 nodes in 4 years, and like that would be badass if she did it. And all I want to leave on this note is like we've gone all the way from like, you know, oh my God, China's so scary, Red Scare, right? All the way to like, the president song, right? Like we're like, this message is brought to you by the election campaigns of both Donald Trump and Joe Biden and like Ronald, what's his name, Kennedy and Viswamathan, whatever. Like every American is like behind this. Like, you know, just like put the song at the end.
That's it. That America song. It's from Team America, World Police.
We need it. That's like I just really want this would be a story that would be so good. Like even if it you know, like, it just, it'd be good. It'd feel good. Like, I would get, I want you to know that if they ramp it, I will fucking buy that CPU so goddamn quick. I'm not joking. Like, I will make a scalper bot with ChatGPT. I will be there. I'll be pressing F5. I will buy the first fucking CPU. If they can get it back, if they can, and it's like, it's an I'll buy it. Like, that would make me really, really, really happy. I just think it's like,
You know, funnily enough, Doug, you know, Intel in 2017 was talking about they're going to ship 10 nanometer. They're going to ship 10 nanometer. It might have been 2018. And Brian Krzanich, who is the second worst Intel CEO ever after Paul Otellini, but, you know, a lot of people would mark him as the worst. He specifically said on an infamous call, 10 nanometer has shipped for revenue. And that 10 nanometer chip was, like, non-existent. Everybody was like, well, what do you mean it shipped for revenue? Where are the chips? Like, where can I buy it? And then randomly, like, there's this, like, random NUC from a Chinese company, is like comes out and like it has it it's a dual core CPU with the GPU completely disabled, and it has like a discrete like low end garbage GPU from AMD, and like I bought that shit. Why? Because I was like, I want to own a piece of history, which is like 10 nanometers failure. And so like, you better bet my fucking ass I'm buying an 18A laptop or something of the equivalent sort on day one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if they pull it off, I own the M1 MacBook for that reason. Like, you know, it's weird. It's like a consumer habit now, but it's also like historic. It's like a treat yourself thing. It's like, oh, this chip really fucking rules, and that's the reason why I had to buy this. So yeah,
you know, funnily enough, a PM at a fund that I was doing, you know, a little thing there for a little bit. PM at a fund was like, hey, Dylan, the new MacBook Pro came out. You know, I was thinking about getting it. And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And they own TSMC. So I was like, dude, not only are you going to get it, you're going to get the M1 Max, because this has 400 millimeter squared of TSMC N5 silicon. Like, are you kidding me? No one else is even shipping 5 nanometer yet. And Apple shipping 400 millimeter squared of it. So like, it's the same attitude, right? Like, you consume the semiconductors that you shill.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, I think we're at the hour. Yeah,
we're good.
So, John, thank you. John is really nice because Dylan and Doug have problems keeping on topic / even creating a topic list / even showing up to their own podcast. So John is now the ballast.
Dude, you say that in third person like we're fucking clinically insane.
Am I wrong? But I'm excited to ship Transistor Radio and get rid of the execution problems. We are now towardly execute. Is that what he says? Is that what Pat
Toward
says?
Toward execution. Yes. Bring this the geek is transistor.
Yeah, Transistor Radio is now towardly executing, bringing the geek back, because John is now here to turn around the ship. So hopefully we'll be hearing a lot more from us soon. We'll be talking about weekly semiconductor stuff. So thanks for coming to Transistor Radio. I guess our sign-off usually is just like say our name and say goodbye. So yeah, I'm Doug from Fabricated Knowledge.
I'm Dylan from Semi Analysis.
I'm John from Asianometry. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah, and have a good night. We'll talk to you next time. All right.
Da, 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 da.